Welcome back to Bond Bros. I'm your host, JT, and I'm joined by my brother, Jason.
Hello.
In this episode, we take a look at Sean Connery's final film in the series? Question mark? Then we take a look at actor George Lazenby's best and worst Bond film.
Yes.
There's not much more to say than that, so we'll get started. Our first film tonight is You Only Live Twice. This is the first time that the films start to release biannually, because if you noticed the years from the previous episodes, it was 62, 3, 4, and 5. Like, they churned
right.
those things out. But the production budgets just got, productions just got way too big. So they were like, okay, we're releasing every other year now.
Yeah.
The director is Lewis Gilbert. This will be the first of three Bond films that he will direct. Lewis Gilbert was mostly known before this for directing the film Alfie,
mm-hmm.
With I think Michael Caine's in the original. I've never seen the original. The writer, for the first time, I think for the first time since this series has started, Richard Maybaum had nothing to do with the screenplay, but it is Roald Dahl. And yes. The writer of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory wrote a James Bond screenplay.
Yes,
he was good friends with Ian Fleming. And that's why Ian Fleming wrote the screenplay for Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, one of Dahl's stories. Also produced by Saltzman. I know it's produced by Broccoli. I don't know if it's produced by Harry Saltzman. Anyway, the music is by John Barry. This time the theme is by Nancy Sinatra. And the reason for that was that your theme was originally going to be sung by her father, Frank Sinatra. But that fell through for whatever reason. The cast in this one includes Sean Connery as James Bond. I'm going to mangle some Japanese names here. Akiko Wakabayashi. And yes, I did try to look up the pronunciation.
You did pretty good on that one. Yeah.
He's a Aki. And that's the thing, yeah, you served 4 years in Japan. You have an advantage.
I've got these.
Tetsuro Tamba, I think is the name,
yes.
as Tiger Tanaka. Mihama as Kissy Suzuki. Karen Dorr as Helga Brandt, the red-headed femme fatale of this one. Charles Gray as Deco Henderson. We'll actually see him again later on in another more important role. Teru Shimada, I think, is the name. Maybe screw that up. He's Mr. Asato.
Yeah.
And of course, Donald Pleasance as Ernst Stavro Blofeld. The first time we see Blofeld on screen for the like his face.
And he's screaming, Michael, the whole time. It's crazy. I don't know. It's just something
it's
Pleasance
like he,
had to do.
It's like he knew.
Yeah.
There are three times during the James Bond series where the producers took the gadgets and the over-the-top villains to a point where they realized that maybe they needed to bring it down a bit for the next movie.
Yeah.
You Only Live Twice is the first time where maybe the filmmakers took things a little too far.
Yeah.
After faking his death, James Bond takes up a mission in Japan. There's a mysterious spaceship hijacking U.S. and Russian spaceships in orbit, and both countries, of course, think the other is involved.
Mm-hmm.
However, the Brits think that it has something to do with Japan because they goddamn tracked the ship landing in Japan.
Yeah, go figure.
I'll be honest when I say that You Only Live Twice usually ranks pretty low on my list. However, in my recent rewatch of the movie, I must admit that I warmed up to it a bit more than I have in the past. There is great action. There's actually great spy work. Bond actually has to be a spy in this one at certain points.
Yeah.
A great villain and great set designs from Ken Adam, which we'll get into, particularly a certain volcano lair.
Yeah. Which, yeah. This,
in fact,
I'll say this right now. This movie and the next one, Mike Myers just needs to thank God for both of them, because he definitely got all of his ideas from these two movies we're doing today.
This one in particular.
Yes.
He got a lot of stuff from. But yes, the movie does go a little overboard with the gadgets, and it was time for a soft reset after this film's release, which they did do in the next film we'll discuss.
Yes.
But I must admit, I do like it. I will say this. I am not a fan of today's, we need to put a trigger warning before every movie because, you know, this was made at a time when there was outdated views. Yeah. However, if you came to me with You Only Live Twice and said, we're going to put some sort of a, like, hey, we had some views at that time, I would kind of be okay with it.
Yeah.
Especially when there's a line, ah, Mr. Bond, in Japan, men come first, women come second.
Yeah. You
know,
yeah.
There's definitely some things here that are maybe more, you know, in these early Bond films, there's certain outdated worldviews for sure.
Right.
Maybe a little bit more prevalent in this movie. But anyway, you know, I can watch it. Like I said, I've only got one Bond film. We'll get to it much later that I do not like. And we'll get to that. So first, Jason, I'm going to ask you. What did you think of You Only Live Twice?
Well, I like this movie. I think it's good. I love that we get our first layer, our first, you know, the thing that like somehow got constructed and nobody noticed anywhere that this volcano was having a secret lair put in it. You know, like this, like not one construction worker talked about, hey, I'm doing some really crazy shit over here, man. I don't know if this is, you know, it's
what the fuck are all these helicopters flying towards this volcano with,
right,
like, construction equipment and fucking bulldozers and shit.
But yeah, I mean, I love shit like that, you know, as far as these movies go, because these are real, especially the early Bond films, real suspension of disbelief films. You just have to do it, you know.
Oh yeah.
And
speaking of that volcano lair, it had to be built outside of a studio because it was so fucking
so
big.
Yeah.
They couldn't build it. And in fact, Ken Adam, who brilliant production designer on these movies and other films as well, but particularly his work on the Bond films, he told Cubby asked him for a quote, how much would it cost to build this thing that you've designed? And he quoted a then astronomical sum in 1967 of $1 million.
Yeah.
To which he and Adam said, without even batting an eyelash, Broccoli went, okay, sure. These fucking films are successful.
Yeah, they're successful. We got to do this, so let's get
it
done.
Let's do it.
It's crazy. But yeah, you know, I enjoyed it. I think you can kind of tell though that Connery was he was tired. He was like, yeah, this is done. You know,
not only that, we were also starting to get into a time of out of shape Sean Connery.
Yeah,
like, those suits are filled up a little bit better in this movie.
Right.
When I say there are three times that a Bond film goes a little too far, one of the things in particular is the gadgets.
Yeah.
You could tell at this point they were focusing much more on gadgets than story.
Right.
Like, how can we build this around a gadget? In this case, it's not a bad sequence, but there was a mini helicopter that existed at the time.
Right.
And the producers would find shit like this out in the world and say, oh shit, let's put this in a Bond movie.
Right.
This mini helicopter was one of them. And it's actually, you know, for 1967, the aerial photography and all that stuff's pretty good. It's not bad, but it is also a moment where it's like, bring little Nelly and tell her to bring her father, which of course is Q. But then you've got ninjas, which, to their credit, ninjas should wear blue to match the evening night sky.
Right.
Not black.
Not black.
You know, not black.
Black
ninjas
is too silhouetting.
But I'm sure as shit they don't use fucking rocket guns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say so. I'd say you nailed that.
Is that? And then I love also, like, here comes Dahl saying that, hey, you want to tell me smoking kills? Fuck you. I'll show you smoking kills. And he's got a fucking cigarette with a rocket in it.
Yeah.
That he lights it and he's just like, boom! And then shoots a fucking henchman at just the right time. Because as you know, there's never a Q gadget that goes unused or is fucking worthless.
Yeah. And it's like Q has some sort of premonition. Oh, he's going to be in this exact position at this exact time and needs this gadget. You know, it's always perfect.
You know what's funny is we're going to come up to some later Bond films as well. Mm-hmm. I want to mention this plot point where Bond has it both ways. And this is kind of made fun of in Austin Powers. He can either be James Bond, super secret spy that nobody knows,
mm-hmm.
or he can be James Bond, super spy that everybody fucking knows.
Well, I was going to talk about that. When we get to the next movie, we'll talk about that.
Well, there's later films, yeah. Especially.
And it happens from era, here it on. Happens. It happens all the fucking time. And it's like...
But I'm going to give this film credit. They're actually doing the work at the beginning to say we're faking his death.
Right.
So that he can be... dead, and therefore he can now go after Blofeld. I love it because this is a so bad, it's funny moment of trying to make Sean Connery look like a goddamn Japanese person.
Yeah, that was unfortunate thing also, from its era.
But also the fucking joke of like, oh, I've set you up with a real pig. A wife. And they even have the joke. First woman comes up, and you're just kind of like, damn it. Yeah. She walks away. Another woman comes up. Sean Connery still has that look like, fuck.
Yeah.
This assignment sucks. And then finally, the beautiful Japanese woman steps up.
Right.
And he's all happy, but.
But yeah, again, you mentioned it. There's some unfortunate things in this film, but the makeup to make him look Japanese is probably one of the more unfortunate things of this movie. Hilarious though it is, you know.
Well, first off, he has to hunch down so low because, and by the way, this is not a jab at like, oh, Japanese people are short. No, they're regular size. Sean Connery's so fucking tall.
Yeah,
he has to.
Well, I can tell you, they are a short people. I mean, I lived there for however long, and like, you know, Rose is 6 foot tall,
and they probably hired the tallest Japanese people they could.
She was an anomaly in Japan. People would just walk around looking at Rose like, "Holy shit," you know?
Yeah,
because she's a 6 foot tall woman. But yeah,
she's a giant.
Yes. But this movie is hilarious in a couple of ways. I'll say that much.
This is the first film. You know, I think there's good Lord, you got a nice maker over there, boy.
Yeah.
Now, this is the first film. I don't think he, especially when we get to a film in the next episode. Sean Connery starting to very much not be interested in this role.
Yeah.
And it kind of is starting to show in this movie.
Right.
We'll get more into that later in the setup for the next movie. But the true star of this movie and the truest inspiration for Dr. Goddamn Evil.
Yeah.
Is Donald Pleasance, Ernst Stavro Blofeld.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember what the name of the original actor, but there was actually an original actor they hired to play Blofeld.
Yeah.
But they had to fire him because he was coming across too much as Santa Claus. He had this big, bushy gray beard and gray hair. And every time he talked, it was kind of very gentlemanly and very soft and nice. And it was like, that's not Blofeld.
Right.
And so then they get bald-ass Donald Pleasance, put a scar on his fucking face, and suddenly it's one of the most over-the-top, sinister, evil performances ever. But he's got one of my favorite lines, which is simply the title of the movie, delivered by Donald Pleasance, which, you only live twice, Mr. Bond. Yeah. But he has that Bond villain persona.
Right.
He's a good Bond villain. He's got the cat, of course, the monochrome suit, the scar, the bald head. He's Doctor Who personified, and fuck, he lives in a goddamn volcano lair. So there you go.
You mean Doctor Evil personified? Or Doctor Evil? Doctor Who.
Doctor Evil. Yeah. I'm ready for that new season.
Me too.
And I will tell you this: there will be multiple people who will play Blofeld throughout this early, these early years. There's going to be one way later on, which we'll get to. But in these early years, there's basically three actors who play Blofeld.
Right.
And Donald Pleasence is the best, in my opinion, of the three actors who would play him. The two in the next two films and then this one. I think he's great. I mean, he's so good that, I mean, Mike Myers had him serve as the inspiration for Dr. Evil.
Right.
What did you think of Donald Pleasence's
Blofeld? I think that role is iconic. It hasn't just been in, of course, Austin Powers. I mean, there have been several iterations of people, you know, he was his version of this character was an inspiration for, you know, and you know, the next movie, which we're talking about here later, I won't get into it, but yeah, you know, it was a little too, the next Blofeld is a little too, maybe what you were saying with that first guy that they hired, he's just a little too refined and all, you know, he's not a degree of evil to him, you know.
We'll put it this way. The next actor's a little too cool for school.
Yeah. And which, you know. But there's an interesting thing you could say about Blofeld is yeah, sure, he's all rich and powerful now that he's in charge of Spectre. But he's the kind of guy you look at and go, yeah, you may be this now, but you got stuffed in a locker in high school. You know? Like, you know, there's, yeah, you know, you weren't always so evil. Maybe you're evil because they stuffed you in a locker in high school. Who knows?
The other kids bullied me.
Yeah.
And then I got a shorn scrotum.
Yeah.
But anyway.
When I was 14, I was... As a race street named Film, I ritualistically shave my testicles. There really is nothing like a shorn scrotum. Yeah, I suggest you try it. I used to have that whole thing memorized.
I did that monologue in high school.
Yeah. In the spring, we'd make meat helmets. Oh, God. That was that's just classic. But anyway.
You Only Live Twice. It's a movie that we'll know where it is in the rankings later on.
Are you gonna get into in the next film why Pleasance wasn't brought back to play?
They just went a different direction.
Yeah. Okay.
It was kind of like how they do Felix Leiter. They just kind of kept going after a different actor in each one.
Yeah.
Back then continuity, very loose thing, very loose term, which we'll definitely explain in the next one, because there's one point they very much want to make, but then there's one point they actually overlook that's actually due to the adaptation of the novel, of the novels, because they were filmed out of order. These were not filmed in order of the release of the books. You Only Live Twice. I mean, it's a fantastic movie. I really enjoy it. It's got some major fucking problems. In spite of that. So ultimately I do recommend it. Again, there's only going to be one Bond film that my James Bond obsessed ass is going to say no to, but I do like You Only Live Twice. But Jason, you are my control. You are the one who, yes, you like Bond, but it's new. It's semi new to you, and you're not obsessive like I am.
Yeah.
So I love it when at the end of these movies you rate the movie.
Yeah.
And so I think we're at that point where You Only Live Twice.
Yeah, I'll give it 7 out of 10 volcano construction sites that should have been figured out way before they actually became an evil lair. And the reason I give it that is because what we already mentioned, the gadgets go a little far. The Connery's, you can tell, just really isn't into it. And we're getting the, you know, out of shape. I don't give a fuck about these. I'm going to show up. I'm going to phone it in. I'll take an additional point off. That'll be the third point. That there is some very unfortunate stuff in this. And even for its time, they could have done a little bit of research and realized that some of this stuff wasn't cool. But
yeah, this is one of those few times where I don't think we're ignoring that there's not out of date views in a lot of these early Bond films. Right. There are. Everyone, including the people who make the Bond films, have admitted to that.
Yeah.
It's just I usually don't care for a damn trigger warning. If you can't tell a film, if you can't tell a film is of its time, then fuck you.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with that.
This film, I would be like, yeah, we gotta let people know there's some stuff in here that may trigger quite a few people. But with that said, you mentioned one very clear thing, and that was by the time of You Only Live Twice, Connery was already starting to resent the role of James Bond. Right. Namely, he hated that his private life was pretty much over as Bond mania swept the globe. In fact, I think during Thunderball, the only interview he gave was to Playboy magazine. He was just, he was getting tired of not having some privacy. However, there was another problem brewing, and it's that big old financial problem.
Yeah.
Not enough moolah. Now, the reason for this was Connery was under a 5-film contract, and while the producers were able to renegotiate their deals, they never even attempted to renegotiate Connery's contract.
Right.
That happens all the time today when there's a hit film and you really want to compensate your stars.
Yeah.
At this time, it's just old school way of thinking. Hey, we've got you for 5 films, brother.
Yeah,
you
deal agreed, with it.
Yeah. You agreed with this. That meant that Connery felt he was being underpaid. Probably was at the time.
Yeah.
And that led him to leaving one of the most successful film franchises of its day. This meant that the biggest question was that the producers, for the first time, had to find someone to replace James Bond. Several actors were under consideration. Just like with Dr. No, Roger Moore was once again considered, but he had TV commitments. And what the irony is I think at this point it was the Saint.
Right.
And which was an inspiration inspired by James Bond.
Right.
another actor that was considered, and some people might be going, Jesus, how old was he? I'll tell you. Timothy Dalton was first under consideration for On Her Majesty's Secret Service, the next film we're getting to. But he himself told the producers, I'm 21. He thought he was too young. And he told them flat out, look, I'm too young for the role.
Yeah.
Go for someone else. So the producers went with an unexpected choice, an Australian model, who they saw in a TV commercial that was selling, like, I think, the fryers and fast food restaurants.
Yeah.
They saw he had kind of had the James Bond look and all that kind of stuff. They thought he really looked the part. So they contacted George Lazenby, and they gave him an audition where he staged a fight. They saw that, you know, he comes across pretty good in those action scenes. You know, he could throw a punch.
Yeah.
And they just thought, well, you know, Connery was a largely unknown actor when they cast him. Let's decide maybe not getting another big name would be the way to go.
Right.
And so now it's time for us to see how he did. And that film was 1969's On Her Majesty's Secret Service. The director was Peter Hunt. He had been an editor and second unit director up to this point. In fact, he's the editor who innovated the style of cutting on action. And, you know, it used to be like if you showed an action on screen, you never made a cut until the action was complete. And then you cut. But he was like, no, mid-punch, let's cut to this angle. Let's cut to this angle. This sort of faster-paced cutting style. And later on, he got promoted to second unit director so he could direct some of those action sequences. This was now his time to be the director, and I'm glad they went with him. The writer was Richard Maybaum, who returned. He's the sole writer on this one. And the music is by John Barry. And even though this theme does not play during the opening credits, it is largely considered this film's theme song, and that is We Have All the Time in the World by Louis Armstrong.
By Louis Armstrong, yep.
We have all the time in the world. Yeah. I love that damn song. It's a good song. They actually reutilize it in later Bond movie. But the cast includes, of course, George Lazenby as James Bond, Diana Rigg as Tracy, Telly Savalas, Kojak himself as Blofeld,
yes,
Gabrielle Frusetti as Mark Draco, he's Tracy's father, and crime boss, Elsie Stipat, it's German name.
Yeah, I had it looked up, but I can't pull it up right now. But
she plays Irma Bunt, Blofeld's
Frau Farbissina.
Yes, well, and yes, she's also, Frau Farbissina is this character and the woman in From Russia with
From
Love.
Russia with Love, yes.
Irma Bunt in the novel is Blofeld's lover, which is hard to consider in this movie. But and George Baker plays Sir Hilary Bray. The reason I mention him is only due to the fact that he has to dub Bond through a certain section of the movie when Bond is trying to impersonate Sir Hilary Bray when he first gets to the resort. Anyway, so here's the deal with Honor Majesty's Secret Service. When I was younger and Dad was introducing me to the Bond films for the first time, he called me into the living room because a James Bond marathon was on one of the TV channels. The film that was currently on was about to end, and we saw that a Bond film titled On Her Majesty's Secret Service was about to come on. And on the TV guide, you know, it gave the year 1969. So we had assumptions. And so when Dad and I started watching the movie, we noticed something a little different by this Bond. It was a 60s Bond film, but it sure as shit wasn't Sean Connery. And admittedly, Dad and I hated the movie by the time it had, it was finished. We were like, "What? Who the hell is this guy?" That was our big thing. That was our big hang-up. However, much like Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, a first impression can often be a wrong one.
Yes.
When I started to collect as many of the Bond DVDs as I could, I bought On Her Majesty's Secret Service because at that time I was a completionist. If I was going to get a series, I was going to get the whole series.
The whole thing, yeah.
Love it or hate it, I was going to get it. This is weird, the rules we set up when we're young. I also had a rule that if I bought a DVD, I had to watch it that day.
Yeah.
I had to put it in there and view it right then and there. So I popped the movie in, but of course this time I was, you know, there was no surprise that it was not Connery. I knew it was this other guy.
Right.
And to my surprise, I found that I loved watching the movie. In the film, Bond is still trying to track down Ernst Stavro Blofeld, played by Savalas. Blofeld is trying to make a claim on a royal family inheritance. That's Bond's in.
Right.
But of course, he also has a goddamn weird, crazy plan to extort a hefty ransom from the world.
Yeah.
using a group of brainwashed ladies known as the Angels of Death.
Right.
They think they're being treated for allergies, but slowly he's been brainwashing them into, like, you're going to release a bioweapon into the fucking world. That's the plot.
Right.
But to my surprise, I found that I love this movie. Bond falls in love with Diana Riggs Tracy, who is the daughter of a crime boss who's trying to help Bond track Blofeld down. He is this version's Karim Bey from the movie From Russia with Love. They always try to give him some sidekick that he's going to have in the movie in some of these Bond films. Most of the time it's Felix that is in that role, but in some cases it's some outside source. And Bond and Tracy both fall for each other, but the question is not whether it will end happily ever after.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
This
movie does a great job of bringing things back down to earth after the over-the-top, you only live twice. Like, if you watch the movie, he really only uses really one major gadget, and it's that big fucking safe-cracking thing that he has, that a crane has to bring up to him. And while he's definitely not the best actor to play Bond, I'm going to give it to Peter Hunt, who said that he wished George Lazenby had kept going as Bond, because if he had stuck to the overall contract, he would have grown more comfortable in this role And I think he would have been remembered as a pretty damn good Bond.
I think I'll go with further to say that. I'll agree with Broccoli in that had he kept with his contract, he would have been the Bond. Yeah. I think he would have surpassed.
I see an alternate universe where that happens.
Yeah. And yes. he would have, because he would have made this role his, especially had he done at least one more. And in the next one, it be him dealing with what happens at the end of this movie.
Of this movie.
Yeah.
Overall, this movie, just real quick, has top-notch action, with Lazenby doing most of his own stunts.
Yes.
Diana Rigg is one of the best Bond girls, and probably easily the most tragic. Maybe only one other person compares in that category, but we'll get to her way later in the series. Savalas is a good Blofeld. He's just not as good as Pleasance. He's maybe a little too smooth for the role.
Yeah.
And the movie, overall, is a solid spy thriller. It's earned its spot as one of the best Bond films, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Overall, Jason, I'll turn it over to you real quick before I make some more notes. What did you think of Honor, Majesty, Secret Service?
I love this movie. I love the almost complete lack of gadgets in this film. I love that... there's a point where he has to escape a room and he takes a strip of metal out of like a ruler and he uses that to do it. He's using the things around him. He's being resourceful. You know, he doesn't have the perfect gadget at the perfect moment, you know. The beginning of this film is very slow paced, where they're establishing a lot of things. Now, that is not the fault of the actors. That is not the fault, really, of anything other than 1960s storytelling.
That, and they're also trying to get back to the more spy thriller pace of From Russia with Love.
They are, but that was...
But they just went a little too slow. It just slows down.
They went a little too slow with it. And, it's funny, Jack Neal and I were talking about this the other day. Good friend of mine. It's very well known in Hollywood now that, but it wasn't known then. Female editors are the best editors in Hollywood. They are more willing to cut bullshit out and tell you, no, you're already saying that with this. You don't have to say it here. And this is a movie that could have dealt with a woman's touch, because there's things that they establish through one scene, and then they spend another three scenes reestablishing this, you know, it's especially when it comes to building the love story between Bond and Tracy, and this definitely could have used a woman's touch as far as the editing room goes.
Well, what's also hilarious is how they want to pay attention to continuity in one area, but they lose it in another area.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have two things to make this point. The other one is there's a point where he thinks he's going to resign because M won't let him go after Blofeld anymore. And so he tells Moneypenny, tell that overbloated asshole that I'm getting the fuck out of here. Right. So he goes back to his office and he starts to go through his drawer and he pulls out the watch with the garrote. He pulls out Honey Rider's dagger, the little miniaturized breather from Thunderball.
Right.
While the themes of the films that those come from play a little bit over the thing. And that was a direct intention. That's why, as much as I love the theory that each Bond is a different person, this codenamed Bond, this was made to establish, look, different actor, same character.
Yeah.
The same guy you've been following for five films up to this point. And so they take great lengths, even though they break the fucking fourth wall with my favorite quote in the movie, which is after he has the fight on the beach and the cold open, and he just looks at the camera and goes, this didn't happen to the other fellow.
Yeah.
Which is the name of this episode.
Right. That's the funny part, too, is you can tell just how hard they are pushing to say, look, it's not Connery, but because it goes directly from that into a sequence, the credit sequence, where they're literally showing pictures of the past adventures of James mm-hmm. Bond, you know, and it just goes on from there.
And just as a little bit of fun trivia knowledge, that line, "This didn't happen to the other fellow," the filmmakers mm-hmm. were making Lazenby do a lot of his own stunts. He didn't necessarily know he was going to do a lot of his own stunts.
Well, and he became well known for doing stunts in his later career. He kept on making movies.
But he kept saying to the directors and everyone, "This didn't happen to the other fella."
Yeah.
And so Peter Hunt was like, "Fuck it, I'm putting that in the movie." Right. He keeps saying that.
Yeah.
but the continuity error that they don't correct, that people, I noticed it for years and I finally got an answer as to what it was, is that why the fuck does Bond not recognize Blofeld and vice versa when they finally meet? Why do they not recognize that, hey, you fucking fought me in my volcano layer.
You're right.
I'm gonna blow that fucker up thanks to your dumbass. In the novels, on Her Majesty's Secret Service is where he first meets Blofeld.
Okay.
He's been tracking Blofeld up to this point. Blofeld's been in his periphery, but he's been like looking for him.
Right.
And he finds him in On Her Majesty's Secret Service. And so that's why if it seems like Bond doesn't recognize him, that's the reason why.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, the one thing that does almost lose me with this film is Blofeld's fucking ransoming plot.
Yeah.
His ransom plot in this one is almost an afterthought. It's, oh, I'm going to have these women. They're going to release this. If I give them their trigger, like Manchurian candidates, they're going to fucking, you know, release this
for $1 million. Dollars.
For $1 million. Mm-hmm. But just like how Austin Powers loves to point this out, it looks like he's going to get the goddamn royal title that he's been going for.
Yeah.
Which will get him fucking access to
millions
of dollars of.
Well, that's like whenever he meets Tracy's father, who is, you know, they quickly point out is head of one of the largest criminal syndicates in the world, you know, and all. But then he's like, he says something like, it's your legitimate holdings that interest me. And he starts naming off all these shipping companies and all this other shit. And he's like, dude, you don't need to have a criminal syndicate. You are a very, very rich man legitimately. Why are you doing this, you know?
Yeah, shut this shit down, man.
Yeah. It's like, you can go legit now, you know?
I love the final sequence at the resort where he has a fucking army at his back with Marco's men.
Yeah.
Because they're going in to save Tracy, which is why Marco agrees to it.
Right.
And Bond is going with them because London has shut down and said, "Nah, we're just going to fucking give him what he wants and fuck it because we can't track him." Even though Bond is like, I know where the fuck he is. Yeah. I can get him. It's a great sequence. That sequence where Lazenby slides down the ice path with the machine gun is fucking awesome.
Yes.
I mean, it's fucking brilliant.
Yeah, I'll talk about that here in a second.
The bobsled is great, too. I mean, that was real people. And the way they did that, this guy's fucking nuts. I can't remember his name. But the guy they hired to film the bobsled stuff, he put on a pair of goddamn rollerblades, and he just skated down that bobsled track backwards in order to film the bobsleds. And if you know anything about bobsledding, even the bobsled people have to know that track extremely fucking well before they'll even go down it. I mean, it's a dangerous goddamn sport in and of itself. And you've got this guy, and there's footage of it, of this guy skating backwards at high speeds, facing a camera to this guy, and he just has to know that track so fucking well. If people wonder why I love earlier films with these great fucking stunts more than I do this CGI created in a computer bullshit.
Yeah.
This is why. Yeah. They fucking had to do it back then. It
absolutely. There was a legitimate danger to the people filming the movie.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, one of the guys, I think, who filmed a lot of the aerial photography of the resort, I think he even got injured on this film, but he came back from this film, but then he died on another film, filming some aerial photography. It was a helicopter crash. insane. In fucking sane.
Yes.
But yeah, this movie, I love it. And of course, this movie has, I think the final thing we can talk about, and again, spoiler alerts, we hope you've seen these movies before you come to us to listen to this. That's the idea, is that you've already seen it, now you want to hear a couple of guys talking about it. The ending of the movie is the first time Bond has fallen in love with a woman, and he asks her to marry him. He wants to marry Tracy.
Yes.
And this is very much true to the novel. This is actually probably the truest adaptation of the novel it's based on. Richard Maybaum stuck fairly true to the novel.
Hmm.
And he gets married, and you think, happily ever after. But as they're driving away from their wedding, Blofeld, who has survived, who comically catches the old tree to the neck thing in the in the bobsled sequence, him and Irma are tracking them, and they do a drive-by shooting, to which Bond then pulls over, and it's like, I think we can get him. He jumps out of the car, and then he looks over, and there's Tracy, who's been shot in the head, and she's dead. Yeah. Like, she's killed. Not your typical Bond film ending.
No.
We're not going out on a good moment. And here is proof that Lazenby would have grown more into the role. His acting in that scene is fucking phenomenal.
Absolutely.
He nails that scene when he tells that cop tragically, we have all the time in the world.
Yeah.
I'm there with him, man. I fucking feel it. And that's why I think, yeah, I wish Lazenby had stuck with it. We'll get to why he didn't in the next episode, because we're...
I'm going to talk a little bit about it too, because my thing at the end of this, it's my little extra that I think people need to go check out.
Well, one thing we'll go ahead and say then. I'll go ahead and establish this. He had a 7-film contract. And he was set to come back. But his agent at the time, this was 1969.
Yeah.
And his agent at the time said, Bond's going to be out of date. Yeah. Bond is going to be it's a fad.
They didn't feel that it corresponded to the hippie culture that was coming in. And
Bond was old news.
And there are two different versions of this story, by the way. He claims now that it was his agent who told him that. And it was also his publicist announced that he would no longer be playing Bond, and that he never told his publicist to announce that. However, the agent and the publicist have both come out and said, no, he knew exactly. In fact, he's the one who told us to do all this. And so, but either way, he has expressed regret, which we'll get into here in a moment whenever I talk about the thing I want to talk about.
Yeah, here's the only reason I tend to believe him, at least in terms of the agent. His agent is the one who, an actor's agent is supposed to be the one who advises you what's good and not good for your career. And considering his inexperience, granted, he did have trouble on this movie.
Mm-hmm.
This was a troubled production. He kind of had to learn how to act on set. Let me just put it that way. As a person. There's even a famous scene now where both Diana Rigg and him came out and said, no, that was us just being playful with one another. Where he said to her, hey, it's time for our kissing scene. And she said, okay. And she took a big bite out of an onion and all that shit. They both said that was just playful banter between the both of us. That was not, there was no serious beef between them. A lot of people looked into that way too far. But ultimately, before we get on to our next segments, Jason, I got to know your rating on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Love this film. Again, I think Lazenby was going to be probably the Bond had he stuck with this for the 7 films that he could have done. I'm taking away 1 point for that little bit of pacing problem that I talked about. So I give this movie 9 out of 10 dummies strapped to a pair of skis that fall way too far off of this fucking mountain, all the way till you see it hit the ground and hear it go thud. And if you watch this movie, folks, you'll understand why this is actually very funny, because they normally you see the bad guy just kind of fly off the mountain and go, ah, and that's it. On this one, they filmed this fucking dummy falling off of this fucking mountain from three different fucking angles, and you watch it from the top of the mountain all the way till it hits the fucking ground.
That was another scene. There's a big ski chase scene that ends with an avalanche.
Yes.
Where Bond is being pursued on skis. That's another scene where that same guy who was filming those scenes got on a pair of goddamn skis and skied at fast pace, fucking backwards, filming the action.
Jesus.
I swear to God, man, kudos to them, because there are later ski sequences in this series that I don't think are as good as the footage they caught. And it's because some crazy madman motherfucker got on some goddamn skis and went, oh, I'll get the shot. All right. Before we get to our final segments, I guess I'll go ahead and add these to the rankings. The Bond rankings, as I've been calling them. Coming in at number 6, You Only Live Twice.
Yeah. I agree.
Again, I like the movie, but You Only Live Twice might be there for, well, a minute. Number 5 is Dr. No. Number 4, new entry, On Her Majesty's Secret Service. It comes in at number 4 of the 6 films, by the way. There's only 6 films currently. And, of course, number 3, Thunderball. Number 2, From Russia With Love. And staying at number 1 for another week. Number 1, Goldfinger.
Yes.
Jason, you said something about you had something to recommend. Yeah, this week, so I'm going to let you get started.
Because we did Your Majesty's Secret Service, I want to recommend to everybody the Hulu documentary, Becoming Bond. It is all about Lazenby. It is all about how he got to be Bond, why he chose not to continue with Bond, and his later life. There's a ton of great information about him in there. But I'll give you, 3 of which now, number 1, adjusted for inflation, probably the most, wealthy person to ever take on the role of Bond. He was the number 1 highest paid male fashion model, before this, to include, he was Europe's Marlboro man. The only person to ever be the Marlboro man and James Bond. The second thing is he invested that money very well. He is an extremely rich human being. He has a lot of property. He's still alive, by the way, folks, if you want to look him up. And he's old as shit.
Let me say, and due to that, his regrets about not playing Bond, not the biggest regret in his life.
Right.
He's had a good life, which is good to hear.
And the other thing is he's a master at 3 different martial arts, so that those fight sequences in Your Majesty's Secret Service, that's why they were a lot better than previous Bond films. They were a lot more well choreographed. He actually studied with Bruce Lee. Was supposed to have dinner with Bruce Lee the night he died. And so he was going to be one of the guests at that dinner they were going to later that night. But knew him well, and actually worked for the production company that produced Bruce Lee's films and stuff. He was in quite a few films. That is one thing I wanted to mention about On Her Majesty's Secret Service, to go back just for a moment. The action sequences in this movie again, great choreography on the fighting. One thing I wanted to go back to, though, is that end scene where they come in with the helicopters and they're storming Blofeld's lair, as it were, very evocative of modern day action sequences in films. It wasn't just the like people running around all over the place, chaos, and just Bond stops for a second, punches a guy in the face, and then runs off to the next one. There was some serious shit going on. We had machine guns, grenades being thrown. I mean, it was really wild. And that Lazenby scene where he's sliding on the ice, firing a machine gun while he's sliding, that was very evocative of modern day action sequence.
Well, what people need to understand is you'll go back and you can watch the early Bond films, and yes, the action is somewhat dated. I mean, it's in the 60s.
Right.
Bond films created the modern day action film.
Yeah.
The modern day action extravaganza that you like, and like, you don't have Mission Impossible today
right.
without James Bond coming before it.
Right.
And you don't have a lot of other action films before James, at least those action films in the way they were released without Bond coming first, because Bond, at this point, Bond is the first name in action.
Right.
You know, and so, yeah, and then that's why sometimes you get movies like On Her Majesty's Secret Service and you get those action sequences and you're like, damn, that could have been in an action movie today. And it's like, yeah, because it inspired the action movies right. of today. So, yeah, for sure. And yes, I am with you. Becoming Bond, I totally recommend, because when I first started watching the documentary, I'm like, is this just going to be a build-up to him becoming Bond? And then, oh, he left it and that's it. No, it's his life up to the point of that documentary.
Right.
And he has since embraced, like, hey, I'm in this Bond film that a lot of people now really enjoy, really love. I'm in this, you know, I go to Bond conventions, and he did all this other great stuff that you have already mentioned, Jason. Totally recommend that movie.
Yeah.
That documentary.
He led an amazing life, and he's, you know, for those of y'all out there who thought, oh, he did the one Bond film and then I never saw him again, and it's must got to be some kind of a tragic story behind it. Nope, not at all. And you will thoroughly enjoy seeing the journey this man's life went through, you know.
And it is good to see that, like, he, you know, after he declined Bond, he wasn't, like, shunned or some shit right. like that, you know. Well, because On Her Majesty's Secret Service, you chose Becoming Bond.
Yes.
For Beyond Bond, the series where I choose something that's related to or whatever, now that we have finally gotten to You Only Live Twice,
yeah.
I am finally choosing the Austin Powers trilogy.
Nice.
You should get most of the jokes after watching You Only Live Twice.
Absolutely.
I did notice something when I watched the first Austin Powers film, though. He's got the suit like Flint. He's got the glasses like Harry Palmer.
Yeah.
And he's got the Walther PPK like Bond. So his whole getup is three famous Bond.
And if you'll notice on Your Majesty's Secret Service, and this is a thing with Lazenby, it's because of his prior career. He is much more hiply dressed in this movie.
Yes.
He has the frilly lace crevasse and all that jazz. That is because he used to be a male model, and also, you know, so of course Austin Powers picks up on the frilly lace crevasse. Yeah.
One crushed velvet suit. There you
yes.
are.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's funny is I didn't realize, though, there's a scene where, for those who don't know, in the first Austin Powers film, he's frozen in the 60s and thawed out in the 90s to fight Dr. Evil, who also cryogenically froze himself. But anyway, yes. That unfreezing scene for Austin Powers?
Yes.
Warm liquid goo phase beginning. That's a direct reference to Demolition Man, starring Sylvester Stallone and Wesley Snipes. Highly recommend that movie, too. But anyway, from 1997 to 2002, I cannot believe it's been that long since the last one, writer Mike Myers bought us one of the funniest series of comedies with Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery in 97, Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me in 99, and Austin Powers and Goldmember in 2002. I will admit that Myers does repeat plenty of jokes throughout three films. But I must also say that I enjoy every goddamn film in the series.
I do too.
He always introduces one other little element, such as Fat Bastard in the second one, or Goldmember himself in the third one.
These little characters, too, on the side, like Suki Me and Suki.
So if you need, if you need a lot of vagina,
yeah,
a lot of what? So if you need a comedic break as we go through these spy films, you can't do much better than Austin Powers. But here's why the spoof Austin Powers works over so many other spoof or satire films, especially those shitty fucking epic movie, Epic Movie, whatever. You know, they did all those after Scary Movie.
Right.
Like, two of the producers of Scary Movie present.
Right.
Those movies would just take fucking random scenes and twist them and make them goofy. And they were not fucking funny at all.
Yeah.
There's only three of those fucking movies. I do recommend the first Scary Movie, and I do recommend Not Another Teen Movie, starring a young Chris Evans.
Yes.
But anyway, the reason Austin Powers works is that it hooks you with, hey, we're spoofing spy films. That's the hook. By the end of these movies, you love Austin Powers. You love Dr. Evil. You love Number Two.
He creates their own stories.
World. You love this world that he's created that lives on its own. How many goddamn people did you hear during that time period? Yeah, baby, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was insane. It was a phenomenon.
Or, as they held their pinky up to their...
Right.
To their face.
And it was a phenomenon. It was one of those things where just like everybody saw it, everybody talked about it and quoted it. You know, it was one of those things.
I highly recommend those, especially if you've caught up to where we are now with the Bond films. You'll get a lot more of the jokes. So, Jason, before we sign off here, though, is there anything else you'd like to add? Anything?
No, just, same as usual, to everyone out there, remember to love each other. And until next time for me, bye. But you go ahead, JT.
All right. Yes, everyone, please be kind and be safe. The reason for this delay is because both Jason and I were sick, but Jason... Yes. I was sick with, fortunately for me, sinus allergy shit.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I did go get tested, but Jason, you caught the vid again.
Oh, yeah, so. Me and everyone in the house had COVID, and, you know, unfortunately, vax helps, but it ain't going to stop you from getting it. So I had it, and it knocked me the hell out. It knocked my whole household out. We're still recovering, but we're there. We're going to be all right.
And that's good to hear. What's funny, I'm going to go ahead and admit something on this episode for all of our listeners. I don't want to ever bug you, like by asking you every day, how you doing? You doing okay, bro?
Yeah.
You okay? But I will get on Messenger to be like, he was active 17 minutes ago. He's okay.
Yeah.
During work, randomly, I'll just be like, I'm just going to, oh, okay. He's been awake since...
Yeah.
Whenever, but that is just that. I just want to bring that up to say that's one of the reasons for the delay while we've been away for a while. But another reason to say be safe out there, people.
Is COVID going around, there is a horrific thing of the flu heading going around too. So just be safe out there.
We may be through the pandemic, but there's a lot of crap out there this year.
Yeah.
Not just COVID anyway. But on that note, though, we hope you liked what you heard in this episode. This is the end of episode 3. This didn't happen to the other fellow. But the Bond Bros will return in episode 4, The Dawn of a New Era.
All right, everybody. Bye.
Later.